from the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, today's show is on correctional technology. We are greatly pleased to have Joe Russo with us today. Joe Russo is the director of Corrections Technology Center for Excellence, a program of the National Institute of Justice, hosted by the University of Denver. Joe has worked in the field of corrections for over 25 years. He has worked on NIJ, National Institute of Justice Technology programs through the National Law Enforcement and Corrections Technology Center since 1998. Prior to that, Joe worked for the City of New York for both the Department of Corrections and the Department of Probation. The website for the Corrections Technology Center of Excellence, if I have that correct, www.justnet.org, J-U-S-T-N-E-T.org. Joe, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you, Glenn. Right. Great to be with you.
Joe, the last time we did a program, it was the most popular program. Everybody is interested in corrections technology. Everybody is really interested in all the different things that you're doing. You're funded by the National Institute of Justice, of the Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice. You're out there with the University of Denver. And you spent a long time looking at all things technology when it comes to corrections. You also are paired with the Law Enforcement Center, correct?
Yes. We are partnering with several technology areas that include law enforcement and corrections.
Right. Correct. So a lot of the stuff that you work on in terms of the law enforcement sector, such as bulletproof vest, certainly will have application for parole and probation officers because our people are called community supervision officers in Washington, D.C. We all have to, when we go out into the field, wear vest. And so the technology on the law enforcement side certainly has implications for the parole and probation side.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, where we once probably thought of these very distinct silos, there's tremendous amount of crossover, particularly in the area of technology, as you mentioned. Personal protective equipment obviously has crossover benefits. But things like electronic crime, which was traditionally a law enforcement realm, now, and we'll talk more about this later, I believe, you know, probation and parole agencies are very much involved with understanding what computer, what offenders are doing on the computer, so electronic crimes as well, even GPS. You know, as you probably know, many law enforcement agencies are now operating their own GPS programs to monitor pretrial defendants. So, you know, as you indicate, there's a tremendous amount of crossover.
And we have 700 people on any given day here within the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency in Washington, D.C. under GPS surveillance. And our law enforcement partners can pick that up through the computers in their vehicles in real time for all 700. So once again, that's a good partnership between law enforcement and a parole and probation agency and corrections in terms of monitoring offenders currently on GPS. If there's a crime, one of the first things that detectives and law enforcement officers will do is to see if anybody with the GPS anklet was in that vicinity at that date at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great example of maximizing the use of technology. It's not a corrections technology. It's not a law enforcement technology. It's a public safety technology that can be used and optimized by a variety of agencies, all in the effort to enhance public safety. Commend what they're doing in D.C.
So, in essence, what the Department of Justice is doing through the National Institute of Justice is funding law enforcement and technology research to better aid the rest of us in the criminal justice system, helping us do a better job through technology.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and particularly, and this is important for you listeners to know, you know, NIJ determines what to invest in based on practitioner input. They convene focus groups in a variety of different areas. We help run the area for community corrections as well as institutional corrections. And these are professionals from across the country who come together twice a year, either in person or over the phone, to discuss what are the current needs of the field, what technologies do we need that don't exist yet, what technologies exist that need to be refined so we can use them better. What information sharing needs to occur, such as the example of law enforcement using GPS data? How can we facilitate that? So that's one of our primary objectives, is understanding the field, understanding what the current state is, understanding what the requirements are, and getting, you know, practitioners to brainstorm. How can we make things better? How can technology make public safety better?
I really don't know the answer to this question, but everybody is just very interested in CSI, crime scene investigation. And as I sit there with my wife watching these shows, and I really choose not to watch the shows, it's her who chooses to watch the shows. I basically and dutifully point out that probably 70% of what she's seeing is pure fiction. Yet, after saying that, you guys, I think, are the people who are involved in that technology on the law enforcement side. I see all these technical documents coming out about crime scene investigation, and there are a lot of them. And I would imagine that comes out of your law enforcement side.
Yeah, we do quite a bit of work in that area. To your illustration of CSI, I think that probably anything that's presented is possible. Whether or not it's generally usable, and whether agencies can use that information now, is probably that's more fiction. But a lot of what we think is not possible. It's being done. It's being developed in laboratories. It's being prototyped. Again, it might not be commercially available tomorrow. It might not achieve widespread use in the next year or two. But listeners would be surprised at what is currently in development, what inventors are looking at, what scientists are playing with. So we might not have thought 20 years ago that we can track offenders in real time in being able to establish patterns of movement and study what this movement means in terms of recidivism. That was kind of a far-out thought, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So we really don't know what the future holds. But again, a lot of the CSI stuff is not practical at this point, but who knows?
Well, let's get on.
10 years, it may well be.
Let's get on to the effects of the research and talk about GPS, global positioning system, or satellite tracking of offenders. There are literally tens of thousands of offenders throughout the United States that are being tracked by GPS. Again, my agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, has one of the highest ratios of people on GPS supervision. And what we do is they put on an anklet, and we can track that person in real time. It's not foolproof. That doesn't mean that everybody on GPS is suddenly going to do the right thing. We can use it as an intermediate measure, and as the person is messing up, we can use that as a measure to bring the person back into control. We can use it as a measure to coordinate the fact that a person was at a crime scene, and if not committing the crime, but certainly in the position to provide information about it. So this is all technology that in essence came from the private sector and your center.
Yeah, primarily the private sector. Again, GPS technology, for those who may not be aware, was developed by the military or for the military to be able to track their assets, namely vehicles, military personnel out in the field. And over time, that developed into a commercial application for tracking people, tracking offenders. So, again, it's kind of an interesting point that, law enforcement and corrections markets are not necessarily large enough monetarily wise to warrant development of technology specifically for their purposes. But we need to be aware of any technology that's out there and be open to modifying and adapting those uses for law enforcement and corrections. And that's where NIJ gets involved in trying to identify some of these early opportunities, see where we can transfer technology, either from military or other applications, put them in a realistic setting for law enforcement and corrections, and evaluate it, see how it works in real practice.
There's new research out of both the state of Florida and I forget the other jurisdiction. I just read it and invited them onto the radio show. I've had the folks from, I think, University of Florida on the radio show. They both show that the use of GPS does pretty significantly reduce recidivism. And again, to those people listening who are not part of the criminal justice system, the return to the criminal justice system either through an arrest or for an infraction of some sort. Infractions are down, rearrests are down, reincarcerations are down if you're under GPS supervision. That seems to bode well for the expansion of the use of GPS.
Yes, it does. I mean, for many years, the technology outpaced the research, certainly. The technology was introduced and quickly adapted throughout the country. Many agencies jumped on it. Legislation was passed in a number of states enabling the use of this technology, in some cases mandating the use of this technology. And what one of the issues was, and what was identified by our practitioner groups, was that we really don't know much about the technology in terms of, what effect does it have? Is it have a positive effect, or is it just the latest fad? Is it the flavor of the month?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the research that NIJ has sponsored and others have sponsored, both in Florida and the recent research in California, is very important. And, it's important to do the research, for one thing, just to have a basic understanding for what the effects could be. But to hear some of the positive results that have come back is also very encouraging. It tells us that, we're on the right track,
mm-hmm.
Which is always nice to know.
I mean,
the technology in and of itself is very powerful and very interesting, obviously. But to have it validate that we are doing some of the right things is very important, and just points out the need for further research to fine-tune our application of this technology to make sure we're doing it with the right people for the right length of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, with 7 million people caught up in the criminal justice system, only 2 are incarcerated within prisons. The rest, I think 5 million, are on parole and probation supervision. That does not include millions more throughout the course of the year who enter a local jail facility. So the great majority of the individuals in the correctional system are on parole and probation supervision. They're out in the community. So finding the most cost-effective ways of supervising them and making sure they do the right thing, and at the same time making sure that they don't commit technical infractions such as not reporting or not going to work or not going to drug treatment, those are all really important things, and that's what GPS provides.
It helps provide that, and it's important, as you mentioned, in this climate, as many states are closing prisons, and there's a burden being placed on local jails, especially in California, as the state system is contracting. Local jails are getting more and more involved in alternative sentencing, electronic monitoring, and GPS to help alleviate that jail crowding situation. All that said, it's important to keep in mind that, again, while it's an important and powerful tool, we have to be careful not to over-supervise and not to put people on GPS who otherwise would not have been incarcerated or would not have received that level of supervision. There's evidence that shows if we over-supervise some offenders who are low risk, we get negative results. So, again, it's using the right tool with the right population.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's not a solution for everybody. So if somebody's listening to this program saying, well, why not put everybody on GPS then? Number one, it's not cost effective. The states and counties simply don't have the money to do it. Number two, it's only to be used for the right offender, principally high risk offenders.
Yeah, and there was interesting research out of New York and I think Philadelphia as well in the area of automated reporting kiosks. And, when New York went to automated reporting kiosks as a way to deal with overloaded caseloads, there was a lot of backlash and a lot of concern that, we would not be supervising these folks and, terrible things would happen and havoc would reign and the streets wouldn't be safe. But as they found out, by putting the right population on an automated service, automatic kiosk, or other reporting system, crime did not go up. Rearrests did not go up. Reporting did not go down. I mean, people still reported to their based on their requirements. So again, if you use the right tool with the right population, and just enough of a tool, right? You don't want to use a sledgehammer where a hammer will do type of approach. You get much more bang for your buck and much more return.
Yeah, I think the experience, Joe, in New York City was that, in fact, those lower-risk individuals, and they decided, I think it was about 50, 60% of their caseload was lower risk. I hope I have that correct. But in any event, it was an awful lot of them. Recidivism actually went down when reporting to the kiosk, so I find that to be pretty interesting.
Well, exactly, and it tells you that, you can kind of infer that there's a danger in over-supervising. If these folks are doing well, not reporting to an officer, maybe not mingling with their colleagues in the waiting room type of thing, and recidivism goes down, well, then you just imagine the effects of over-supervising someone, putting someone on GPS when they really don't have to be. Not only are you wasting resources, but there's the potential for negative outcomes because you're looking harder because of a variety of factors. So we have to be smart, obviously, about how we apply the technology.
Well, it gets us back very quickly to the larger issue that states and counties throughout the United States, and I'm not quite sure the average person understands how much budget has played a role in the last 5 to 10 years at the state level, at the county level. A lot of jurisdictions are suffering in terms of budget. I was reading one newspaper account this morning about a correctional institution, a local jail, letting out a third of its offenders because they can no longer afford to keep them. So the correctional system throughout the United States is the same thing for the law enforcement system. They're really struggling in terms of their budget. So the right technology can make a huge difference in terms of continuing to provide public safety.
There's no doubt, and you know, it's kind of this dichotomy of the situation. It's very tough times fiscally and financially, but it sets the environment up for the need for creative thinking and how can we use technology to maximize our resources and how can we stretch. We'll see technologies like video teleconferencing being expanded tremendously in this era because it's a manpower enhancer. You know, you can do so much more remotely than by wasting time driving in a car for several hours to do a PSI investigation, for example.
Mm-hmm.
These times kind of create the opportunity for creative use of technology. And while there's an initial investment in money, certainly the ROI is there.
Our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is Joe Russo. He is the director of Corrections Technology Center of Excellence, www.justnet.org, www.justnet.org, funded by the National Institute of Justice of the Office of Justice Programs of the U.S. Department of Justice. Joe, I do want to get into the next topic in terms of managing offender computer use. Now, I keep hearing endless stories of offenders on Facebook, sex offenders, looking for individuals to violate fraud-related activities, mundane street-level criminal activities, all taking place or documented via computer and by social media, correct?
That's correct, and it's not only by offenders who are in the community. It's also by offenders who are incarcerated.
Ah, how do they do that?
Well, cell phones are making their way into prisons.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
A major issue for several years now. Despite efforts of correctional administrators, cell phones continue to enter facilities, and they're being used.
And I'm glad you brought that up. There is new technology coming on board, correct me if I'm wrong, that can actually jam those cell phones in a correctional setting.
Jam is a word that we probably shouldn't use. Jam is...
Okay.
is jamming is illegal. The FCC has regulations that prohibit jamming of signals. The correctional administrators are fighting hard to try to get waivers to allow cell phone jamming within their institution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a struggle, and it's an issue that's still working. Some of the technologies that are being used by correctional agencies, in effect, manage signals. So instead of jamming them in a blunt way, meaning we overpower every RF signal that's being emitted.
Mm-hmm.
These systems basically create a local telephone network, a cellular network within a correctional facility or that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called managed access, and they create whitelists and blacklists. So
mm-hmm.
if there are authorized cell phones that are allowed to communicate in that area, they become whitelisted.
Mm-hmm.
Any other cell phone that tries to connect, that is not on that list, in effect, becomes blacklisted, and that call will not go through to the larger cellular network.
And that's in the process of being rolled out to correctional facilities now, right?
Yeah, it's in use in a prison in Mississippi. California recently awarded a contract to providers to provide that system throughout their state. So it's a technology that's being explored in the correctional setting. Like any technology, not perfect, has limitations, but correctional agencies are kind of desperate for tools
yeah.
and solutions to address this issue, and they're looking at every possibility.
Now, you all invented a device in terms of a USB key that could be plugged into a computer and pretty much instantaneously download not everything, but things of interest, such as inappropriate images, inappropriate files. If you suspect that the person's involved in fraud, you can actually do keyword searches. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we got involved in this issue, or became interested in this issue about 2003. We did a search of kind of what was going on in the field. And we found a few pioneers out there who were getting involved in sex offender, particularly managing sex offender computer use. Ed Harrison in Orange County, California, was one, and Art Belker from U.S. Probation was another. And they were kind of the early folks who got interested in this topic area. Computer crime was generally, as we mentioned, a law enforcement realm activity. So it was brand new to community corrections, and mm-hmm. we were looking for a way to add value to help agencies deal with this emerging issue. What we found was that education at that point was the key. Most officers didn't know why computers were important or what the potential risks were of using computers. This was pre-Facebook days, mm-hmm. But the internet was live and thriving. Obviously, we partnered with Jim Tanner, who is a forensics expert in Colorado and also a former corrections practitioner. He's also a forensics person as well, so he brings an interesting nexus of skills and expertise, also very knowledgeable in sex offender management. And Jim had developed a training program called Managing Sex Offenders Computer Use that he had provided kind of ad hoc. We seized that opportunity and decided to get him out into the field to as many states as possible to provide training on just the issue, just the education. What is it about sex offenders that makes the unlimited computer use or unrestricted computer use so dangerous, and what can we do about it? And during that time, from about 2004 or so, we provided training in 30 states to more than 4,000 officers. And while that was a great basic education step, some of the feedback that we got from the officers was, we really don't have the tools to go out and then monitor mm-hmm. that use. Mm-hmm. We understand the problem. We know sex offenders can do all kinds of crazy bad things on the computer. That's fine. What can we do to monitor, prevent? And so it became apparent that the tools were not available. The tools that were available were designed for law enforcement. They were expensive. They required a lot of training to implement. So they required folks to understand computer forensics and be certified forensic examiners, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So what NIJ decided to do, we petitioned NIJ to develop a free software tool specifically for probation and parole. And in 2006, NIJ provided that funding. And with the help of Jim Tanner and his developer, Jim Persinger, we released Field Search. And Field Search, again, as you mentioned, was specifically designed for probation and parole, which is a major distinction. Nothing was designed for probation and parole
right.
specifically. It was designed for non-technical officers, so anyone who understands Windows, understands Explorer, and how to create a file can run this program. Mm-hmm. A quick and easy way to scan an offender's computer and create a report of their findings so that they can provide that information to courts or treatment providers as they deem appropriate. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, it looks for URL history so we can see what websites the offender has been on. We can search for images. We can see what videos the offender might have on his computer. We have a keyword search function so that if there are specific words we're looking for, we can find out if they appear on any document that's on that offender's computer. And again, the impetus here is quick, something that allows the officer to get in and out of the home as quickly as possible, something that's powerful that will gather the information and be able to provide that in an actionable way so that if the officer needs to proceed with a violation, he can document that and go to court. If it's information that he just wants to provide to a treatment provider, that's very valuable as well. And as you know, sex offenders are not, and most offenders and most people are not forthcoming about their deviance or their interests, for example. Mm-hmm. But if we can document what you've been doing on your computer, that's irrefutable. You can't deny that you're not interested in, young girls with blue eyes and blonde hair.
Sure.
If that's all you've been looking at for the last 6 hours.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the impetus of Field Search.
Now, I just did a radio show last week with the National Organization for Victim Assistance, and when we were talking about fraud, and much of that was computer-related, technology-related, and so the sense was, in terms of reading some of the material that they sent me, is that there are some offenders who were switching over from street crime to computer-related crime. So what they're talking about now is I understand sex offenders, and I understand, you know, other things that we could be looking at, traditionally have looked at, but are we looking more and more into the fraud-related arena to be sure that people under our supervision are not involved in fraudulent activities?
Absolutely. I mean, if we think about it, the computer can be used to facilitate almost any crime, and I'd be hard-pressed to think of any crime that could not have a digital aspect to it.
Right.
So, I mean, both on law enforcement and the corrections perspective, the computers are very much an important part of supervision and crime solving. And from the, particularly from the supervision perspective, it's not just the crime aspect; it's also just the way of life. You know, if you interview a client, a probationer, you'd want to know about his employment, his, you know, drug or alcohol problems.
Right.
Where are you living? But the virtual life, your presence online, says so much about you as a person, who you're associating with on Facebook, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Agencies are starting to understand the power of that and get involved with, you know, just monitoring activity just as a basic course of supervision, some perhaps not directly related to a particular crime, past or future, but just what's going on with offender A. Let's look at Facebook.
I've seen plenty of instances where offender A has been bragging on Facebook that he's committed this crime and held up the booty from the crime and took a picture of it or bragged about how he assaulted either a man or a woman. And, you know, that's really relevant information for those of us who supervise individuals.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, it could be something as, you know, kind of mundane as that, where it's an open and shut type of case, you know, the offender holding up a weapon or that,
right,
or drugs or that type of
right
thing, all the way to a sex offender who is, you know, starting to groom a potential victim.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, you know, located on some dating sites or other things he shouldn't be at.
I think one of the things that we found is an offender looking at how to defeat drug tests. That's pretty telling, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. It's kind of hard to justify and talk
yes
your way out of that one.
Yeah, especially when it's documented off of your own computer.
No doubt. We only
have a couple minutes left, Joe. The shows that we do with you fly by so quickly. You had a couple success stories in terms of field search, the USB key plugging into the computer.
Yeah, we did. And I just want to real quickly mention that, you know, field search was created with seed money through NIJ. NIJ funded the Windows version as well as the Mac version.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Tanner and Jim Persinger donated thousands of hours of volunteer time to create updates to that software, the unpaid time, just dedication to the field.
Mm.
And they helped create the latest version of Field Search, which is 4.0, which was released last month, that provides a number of different enhancements to the software. So I want to acknowledge them. But the success stories are many. You know, some are dramatic. We had a case recently in California where a probation officer were able to use field search to get a really dangerous offenders off the streets. In this particular case, the offender was a sexually violent predator. He had two previous convictions for abducting and molesting two young girls, like in two separate cases. He served many years at a Tuscadero State Hospital, which is, you know, kind of their treatment facility.
Right.
Upon his release, he failed to register as a sex offender in the county he was living and was sentenced to probation for that. While he was on supervision, fortunately, this officer, probation officer, had access to field search, noticed that there was a laptop in the offender's residence, did a scan on the computer, and found evidence of child porn.
Mm.
The offender was arrested for a violation, and the computer was seized, and local law enforcement did a full forensics evaluation of that computer. And they later found hundreds of images of child porn on the offender's computer. This led to criminal charges, and the offender was prosecuted. He was found guilty and was sentenced to 50 years to life under California's three strikes law. So this, you know, child porn, people think that it's a hands-off type of activity. They think that, you know, you're just looking at an image on a computer, you're not hurting anyone. But there's strong correlation between hands-on and hands-off type of behavior. And this particular, you know, offender, again, because of his sexual violent history, it's especially gratifying where you can play a small role in getting someone like that in custody where he belongs. He's obviously not safe.
Joe, you have the final word. We have to close. Really appreciate you being with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Russo, the director of the Corrections Technology Center of Excellence, www.justnet, J-U-S-T-N-E-T.org, funded by the National Institute of Justice of the Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice. And this is D.C. Public Safety. We appreciate all of the interaction that we have with you. We appreciate your advice in terms of new shows, your comments and your criticisms, and we do want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.